3 years ago, my next guest was 27 weeks pregnant when she received some unimaginable news that could have changed the course of her pregnancy. She's part of the Save the Eighth campaign, and she's decided to share her story with us. And Louise Dunleavy, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Now, up to that point, was everything going normally?
Everything was going normal enough. I wasn't feeling particularly well. It wasn't going great, I have to say.
This wasn't your first child?
This wasn't my first child. It was my fifth baby.
And so you were able to compare.
I was able to compare, and it certainly was probably the least enjoyable. Not that it's ever enjoyable, but it was quite difficult just in terms of my energy, that sort of thing. But this was completely different. It happened quite suddenly.
Now, what did happen? What made you say, I've got to go to see the doctors?
Okay, so one Thursday evening, I suddenly developed a weird pain in my back. And weird was the word I'd use because it was a pain like I'd never had before. It wasn't an ache or I still don't have the words to describe it. It was weird.
Was it acute?
It was, at the time, possibly not. No, I wouldn't have been howling in pain. But I stayed at home for the weekend, went to doc on call. They didn't know what was wrong with me. Again, maybe kind of thought it might be a urinary tract infection or something, but you know, so I had an appointment in my maternity hospital on the Monday morning anyway. So I said I'd attend that and see what they said. So she took one look at me and said, we'll keep you in for pain relief, pain management. So I was really relieved with that because at this stage I was getting I was very uncomfortable. I won't say distressed, I'd say uncomfortable. And they admitted me, put me on pain relief, you know, Tylex that you wouldn't normally get, obviously, as a pregnant person at home, and physio. But this didn't work, and the pain just increased and increased and increased. And obviously, they began to get quite worried about me. I was worried about myself. I was more worried about my pain. I think the pain for me was the only thing I could kind of focus on.
Now, were you thinking that maybe you'd gone into premature labour or something like that?
No, not at all.
Wasn't that kind of pain?
No. It was upper back pain. It was upper back pain, and it was constant, maybe spasm-like, but more or less constant. And, you know, they were giving me quite strong, you know, pain relief, maybe some pethidine, maybe even Oxynorm, which is like a morphine kind of derivative. And, you know, I might get 20 minutes from that before I was back into sort of severe pain. And so they were starting to do things like bloods. My own team and then other teams in the hospital began to look at me because they just didn't know what was going on. And then they booked me in for an MRI scan.
Now, what gave you the result which led to a diagnosis? Was it the scan or was it the bloods?
So it was a combination of bloods and scan. So the scan showed that I had this big abscess on my upper spine, in my spine, in my epidural space, you know, where maybe you'd put an epidural if you were having a baby or something. It was in there, and they said it was actually totally pushing my spinal cord out of the way.
Which was causing the pain.
And they said no amount of pain relief would ever have kind of, you know, fixed that. I was screaming in pain at this point.
So what was the treatment that was recommended at that point?
Well, my bloods were showing that I had a very, very serious blood infection as well.
So was this the onset of sepsis?
Yeah, I had septicemia. So my C-reactive protein, which is a blood that they do to sort of indicate infection and inflammation, was extremely raised at this point. It was 350. That was the same day I had the scan. So between the scan and the bloods and the blood cultures as well, which is to see is there an organism or a bug growing in the blood, showed that I had everything. So I had this thing in my spine, which without treatment always ends in death. And even with treatment can end in paralysis if it's not treated quickly enough.
Was all of this explained to you?
Yes and no. I think at the point I was diagnosed, my only concern was my pain. I was just in such pain.
Take the pain away.
And I was relieved I'd found something. I think I thought I was going mad. The pain was just so severe and so brutal that I was just delighted that I wasn't completely mad.
Can you put this in the context of the timing of Savita Halappanavar and what we knew or did not know at that time?
I suppose at the time, absolutely, I wouldn't have been thinking like that, not remotely. Maybe when I came home from hospital after all my treatment had happened, I may have begun to think of it within the context of Savita, because I did have septicemia and we know that Savita died from septicemia. The source obviously was different of our sepsis. So I did, look, it was a long time after I was discharged, after my treatment, that I began to maybe think in the context of that, and how critically ill I'd been and how immediate my treatment had been.
Now, was this after the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act had been passed? Because that was, I think, available from the 1st of January 2014.
Yeah, so this was in 2015.
So in theory, they could have said to you, hang on a second, your life is in serious jeopardy. Termination is an option. Was that ever said to you at any point by anybody?
No, it wasn't. What they said to me was, we will deliver the baby. So the very first thing they were going to do is deliver the baby. Now, as I was 27 weeks...
You were on the cusp of viability.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so, I mean, a baby at 27 weeks has a very good chance of survival with a long road and with lots of difficulties. And I had been through that 2 years previously. I had been through a premature birth. So I was quite hysterical at the concept that I was going to be delivered. They told me they'd deliver me to do surgery. And when you look at this condition, if the patient or if the person begins to lose any sort of power, you have to operate. Otherwise...
So there was never any prospect of termination here because it would have been an early delivery.
It would have been an early delivery. However, had it happened before viability, I assume it would have been a termination.
So in terms of bringing you into decisions about your own treatment, or were you in any mental state to actually make decisions, or were you in the hands of the doctors?
I was in the hands of the doctors. Yeah, I don't look back and think of somebody I wasn't. I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't know how sick I was. I was very scared, but I had no idea. It was weeks later before I realised. I mean, the following day, a doctor told me that I was maybe 6 hours from being paralysed and maybe 12 hours from death. But at that stage, I was still very sick. I was still on a lot of morphine. I was on huge amounts of antibiotics. It didn't really sink in.
So what they decided to do, I mean, they may have well explained it to you, but you weren't in a receptive mood, shall we say. What was the treatment that they then employed?
The treatment they employed was, this was sort of explained to me at the time, and again afterwards I spoke to them and read up on it, was if they can get, you know, a sample of the fluid causing the infection, then they can actually, it is okay to match the antibiotic. They didn't know if they were going to be able to get that, and I was lucky enough that in the radiology department in the James's, they were able to actually get, with a massive needle into my spine, they were able to get some of the...
With the scan, they were able to pinpoint precisely where it was.
Yeah, and they were able to get some of the fluid out. And so I think once they were able to do that, they went with... Basically, they just covered me with every antibiotic they could come up with until they had the exact bug. So maybe for 48 hours, you know, infectious diseases teams, the microbiology teams would work together to decide what antibiotics to put me on. And, I mean, that weekend I was on about 4 different antibiotics that were going nearly continuously. And then when they had the bug, which was Staph aureus, which was also my blood cultures, they were then able to decide what they were going to leave me on. And I was on IV antibiotics in hospital for 6 weeks. In hospital for 6 weeks, yeah.
Now, you're thinking of your baby then. When the pain has been relieved somewhat, you're beginning to think about your pregnancy. And what thoughts were going through your head? I mean, were you concerned that your baby would be okay under these massive doses of antibiotics?
Initially, I suppose I was relieved that I had my diagnosis. This was in the immediate aftermath of my diagnosis. And it was a 24-hour period where I wasn't in a maternity hospital anymore. And I was being looked after well, and I actually felt quite safe. And, you know, I was happy. I was diagnosed. I was in severe pain still. The pain hadn't changed. But I forgot I was pregnant. And I remember a midwife coming to see me maybe a day later, and suddenly the realisation that I had been taking these huge doses of antibiotics and morphine and hadn't been even thinking about the baby. And I had this panic, and they had to get an ultrasound machine and so on. They couldn't find a fetal heart, and... Yeah, that was my main, that half an hour period, I thought, oh my, I didn't even think about the baby. I was just taking all these drugs they were giving me and, you know, but he was fine. He was fine throughout the whole treatment, but I just remember they were so amazed at him that he managed to kind of sail through it. There never seemed to be a problem with his heart rate or any of the things they would monitor. So
neither the sepsis nor the drugs
seemed to affect him.
No. He came through.
He came through fine, yeah.
So was he born at 40 weeks?
He wasn't. He was born at 34 weeks. I went into labour and then the labour stopped, and then they were just brilliant. They just, I suppose they got together themselves and just decided that the safest thing at this point, given my history, was to deliver him. So they delivered him at 34 weeks. Really, probably for my sake, I think.
And what weight did he come in at?
He was about 5 pounds. He was a good
bit. So he wasn't
for me.
He wasn't a tiny baby.
No, not at all. No.
How is he today?
He's brilliant, yeah. He's fine, not bothering him.
Now, you're with the Save the Eighth campaign.
Yes.
Why?
I suppose I would have always been of a pro-life persuasion, and I would feel very strongly now that we need to constitutionally protect the rights of the unborn. However, I suppose my story and why I'm sharing my story, which is not an easy thing to do, is really because I suppose I'm quite concerned, like many others, that there's a sense out there that, you know, maybe women aren't being looked after properly in Irish hospitals. And, you know, I respect and I really understand that people have some sort of sincerely held beliefs that, you know, women have a right to choose, and that, you know, that the right to choose actually trumps, you know, the right to life of the unborn. And I know that and accept that. And I know lots of people that feel like that. And we have, you know, discussions and all the rest of it. But for me, I suppose, I think it's really important that we kind of emphasise that women are being treated in Irish hospitals, and, you know, they're not dying from lack of treatment because of the Eighth Amendment. And, you know, we see that with our figures in maternal deaths, and we see that we're doing quite well by international standards. And that just wouldn't be the case if the Eighth Amendment was preventing doctors from treating women for pregnancy-related conditions.
Now, you mentioned earlier that had your trouble started before 26 weeks, 27 weeks, which is, as we said, the cusp of viability, if not total viability, with whatever downstream health effects there might be for a very premature baby. And they sometimes grow up with some issues. Health problems, but they, you know, by and large do come through. If that had happened to you at 16 weeks or 12 weeks or whatever, and they may have invoked the Protection of Life During Pregnancy Act and said to you, look, you're very sick, you've got sepsis, and this is a choice. It wasn't put to you because it wasn't relevant. In your case, it would always have been an early delivery.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you think that act is enough?
Yeah, I mean, I don't
women?
Think it would have been a choice for me at that point. I mean, I would have died without treatment. So it wouldn't have been a choice for me. I doubt very much they would have given me the choice. I assume they just would have acted. And obviously, had I to choose at that point, of course, I'd choose my own life because, you know, two of us would have been dead. So, you know.
Yeah. But in fact, that is not the question that you were asked or the situation you were in.
No,
I
would have had to face an early delivery, and an early delivery brings lots of problems with it, including a 20% mortality rate, huge, huge other issues, you know, like for example, a huge, huge number would have cerebral palsy and so on and so forth, you know.
Now, you said to me there that you do discuss these issues with other people, that there are other women who have different views to yourself and you kind of respect their right to hold those views.
Absolutely, yeah.
They would say, well, that then really maybe you're pro-choice, that you're allowing other people to make the choice. And if that was the case, then why not vote yes?
I am not pro-choice because I don't believe it's ever right, unless a mother's life is in danger, to take the life of the unborn. And there is two lives always in question. I suppose I'm saying that I respect that people hold those opinions, but for me, it's quite important that people understand what they're voting for, and that we don't actually need to change this to save women's lives. Women are not dying for want of care in the Irish Health Service. That this referendum is about reproductive choice.
Now, we know the question marks over Savita's treatment and care and the reports that followed. And there are those who believe in the obstetric community that it was part of the issue that cost Savita her life. What do you say to those people?
Well, I suppose, again, we have to go back to those three reports. Three reports said she died of septicemia. Staff were disciplined. A lot of staff were disciplined. The hospital paid compensation. I mean, I just don't believe the hospital pay compensation if they could blame the law. In this case, Savita did not receive the treatment she needed when she needed it. It was negligence.
All right. But she herself was asking for a termination.
She was, and she should have been treated. She should have received. She should have been diagnosed with her infection, and she wasn't, and that's terrible.
All right. So you are campaigning. You've shared your story with us. You're campaigning to save the eighth.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. Well, on that note, Louise Dunleavy, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.